From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Ed Morin with the news on This Day in Maine, Friday, April 24th, 2020. Maine now has 965 recorded cases of COVID-19 and 47 deaths, an increase of 3 from yesterday. State Center for Disease Control Director Dr. Neeraj Shah says most of the recent confirmed deaths were residents in nursing homes.
In the past 2 days in Maine, there have been 7 individuals who have passed away who are residents of long-term care facilities, just in the past 2 days.
25 residents of Maine nursing homes have died from COVID-19. The CDC is monitoring outbreaks at a half dozen facilities. The most recent outbreak was detected at the Edgewood Rehabilitation and Living Center in Farmington, where there are 13 cases among residents and staff. More on the story just ahead. Some 20,000 Mainers seeking unemployment benefits will soon receive expedited approvals and denials in the mail. Maine Department of Labor Commissioner Laura Fortman says with more than 100,000 people applying for benefits since March, the department this week decided to waive standard processes in an effort to move things along.
Every decision was based on an analysis of the claim's likely outcome. This means that about 5,000 claims will be approved. Also, about 7,000 claims will be denied.
And the remainder, she says, will be given an expedited fact-finding interview to further assess eligibility. Many of the denials, she says, are likely to be received by self-employed and contract workers who applied for aid before the state rollout of its pandemic unemployment assistance program, which she says won't happen until next week, the week of Monday, April 27th. Fortman says more than two-thirds of the state's 101,000 applicants are currently receiving benefits, including an extra $600 per week provided by the March stimulus package. But she says many other applications still await decisions. And she says the department is also looking at ways to expedite an anticipated onslaught of applications from self-employed and contract workers. Fortman says her goal is to reduce the time those workers will have to wait for checks, which is currently 10 to 14 days.
This Day in Maine is made possible by Modern Pest Services, committed to taking an intelligent approach to pest control. Learn more at modernpest.com. And by the Dempsey Center, making life better for people managing the impact of cancer. Locations in Lewiston and South Portland. DempseyCenter.org.
Hi, Jennifer Rooks here. As you know, Maine Calling has focused our programming this past few weeks to coverage of the coronavirus crisis. We've talked to the CDC, the governor, experts in finance, healthcare, and more. If you missed one of our shows, you can always find all of our past programs at mainecalling.org. Maine Calling, online anytime at mainecalling.org. Thanks for listening and stay safe.
Residents of nursing homes account for more than half of all deaths from COVID-19 in Maine, one of only a handful of states that share that distinction. As Patty White reports, the Maine Center for Disease Control is grappling with how best to prevent further outbreaks in settings where transmission can be swift and deadly.
So far in Maine, the deaths have been concentrated at 3 of the 6 nursing homes with outbreaks. At the Maine Veterans Home in Scarborough, 11 residents have died. At Tall Pines in Belfast, 10 residents. And at the Augusta Center for Health and Rehabilitation, 4 residents. In total, says State CDC Director Dr. Neeraj Shah,
there are 25 individuals who have passed away who are residents of long-term care out of a total of 47. So that's a high percentage.
It's more than half of all COVID-19 deaths in the state. Just 6 other states that publicly report data have rates that high, according to a recent report from the Kaiser Family Foundation. Shaw says the high rate in Maine can be explained, in part, by the aggressive testing policies his agency has taken. The state CDC broke away from federal guidelines to elevate nursing home residents and staff to top priority for testing. The agency was also one of the first states to implement universal testing for all residents and staff in facilities in which an outbreak of at least 3 cases was detected.
As a result of that, patients who might have otherwise passed away are now passing away and being classified as COVID-19. So that does affect the numbers.
At the same time, Shaw says, nursing homes can be a hotbed for COVID-19 transmission, and that's why they're a primary focus for the state. The Mills administration recently surveyed Maine's 93 nursing homes to assess their preparedness. The state's long-term care ombudsman, Brenda Gallant, collaborated with the state to conduct the survey.
Well, I think that some facilities seem very well prepared and others just need support.
Gallant says her office is reviewing the results of the survey to determine what assistance nursing homes need.
What I would stress is this, is that PPE is the critical element in terms of safety for residents and staff.
The state CDC has made deliveries of PPE, or personal protective equipment, to nursing homes, but a global shortage has been an ongoing issue during the pandemic. Gallant says staffing has been a perennial challenge that's now been magnified, but there are positive signs. She says some healthcare workers from within the medical community have responded to calls from the State Board of Nursing to work at nursing homes during this public health emergency.
I guess I want to stress that there's a lot going on outside the facilities to try to support them as they face this great challenge in providing care during COVID-19.
And Dr. Nirav Shah of the CDC says he expects to soon unveil additional policies and services for nursing homes to prevent outbreaks. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
As Maine Governor Janet Mills considers reopening the state economy, a key consideration is the state's ability to test for COVID-19, but it's a difficult task. Maine Public's chief political correspondent Steve Missler discussed the way forward with Maine CDC Director Dr. Nirav Shah, who acknowledged that the state has so far been forced to ration testing for the virus.
We do have to focus on certain higher risk groups of patients because the supply of reagents from the federal government and from manufacturers is not as robust as we'd like it to be. We're not happy about that. And ideally, we'd like to move toward getting rid of those focus areas and just throw our doors open to be able to allow testing for any doctor who wishes to send it to us. That's our plan. We'd like to move in that direction. But before we can throw open our doors in that manner, we've got to make sure that we've got this predictable supply of the chemicals that we need, or otherwise we could throw our doors open and not actually be able to run tests and end up with a backlog. But, Steve, I want to be really clear about one thing. Although that focus on the highest risk patients does exist at the Maine CDC lab, it does not necessarily exist at commercial laboratories. So physicians are still able to send samples to commercial laboratories if they've got patients they'd like to get tested. But the reason we have that in place at our laboratory is so that doctors can get results on patients where they need to make an immediate treatment decision, or a patient who might be in the hospital, or a patient who's a healthcare worker, who for whom the result of the test might determine whether they can go back to work the next day and start serving patients again, or whether they need to stay home for 14 days. And so that's why we've got those areas of focus, because we know that rapid result is really essential and critical for decision making.
The idea behind more expansive testing is that it would allow public health officials to effectively swap these broad shutdowns and stay-at-home orders for more targeted quarantines. If that's true, what can Maine do to expand its capacity?
So right now, our focus is on both expanding the amount of testing that we can do, our so-called testing capacity. That's plank number one. And step two is making sure that doctors know that once we've eliminated all these tiers, that once our doors are completely wide open, they should start sending us samples, not just on patients who are showing symptoms, but now in this next phase, we'd like to start offering testing for patients who are not showing symptoms. The third thing we need to do to make this strategy really come together is to ensure we've got a broad and wide base of contact tracers. Right now, Maine CDC has dozens of people that are undertaking this process of touching base with everyone who's tested positive, but we're going to need more because, as you say, this swaps out the broad strategy for a targeted one where we basically draw a box around every single person who we test positive and try to contain the disease that way.
A recent study by Harvard called Roadmap to Resilience said states need to test between 2 and 6% of their respective populations every day. That means testing between 26,000 and 80,000 Mainers a day. Is that even possible?
That was the high bound of their estimate. The same group has also estimated that where we need to go from compared to where we are right now is doubling or tripling the capacity at the state level.
The New York Times editorial board recently advocated for the federal government to centralize a testing program, specifically in the procurement of supplies. Do you think that's a good idea?
It is one approach. There are benefits of moving toward a centralized model, one of which is that it might help eliminate some of the competition by and among states to get our hands on different pieces of equipment. Steve, you and I have previously talked about, in some situations, how states are reluctant to share what they're doing for fear that they might another state might swoop in, and that's clearly a problem. On the other hand, centralization might mean a central point such that if one problem arises, the ripple effects would be felt across all 50 states.
Governor Mills recently indicated that the White House has overestimated Maine's current testing capacity, and you also took issue with those estimates. Now, I understand that the White House documents were not supposed to be shared publicly, but can you tell me how off the estimates were?
Well, you know, you raise a good point. The document itself, the documents that we were furnished by the White House, did not actually provide an overall estimate of the state's testing capacity. What they did was provide a list of different machines that were available in the state that, according to the White House, could be used to conduct tests. To the outsider, it gave the impression that there was a vast amount of machinery in Maine that could be marshaled in order to conduct testing. But it's not quite accurate. It's a little bit like going to the manufacturer of stoves and ovens and asking them, how many ovens have you sold in Maine? And then from that, concluding how many professional bakers there are in the state. It doesn't quite add up that way. There's a lot of machines out there in Maine that are used in the testing process, but it doesn't necessarily mean that they can be immediately converted in order to do coronavirus testing. So it was concerning because it could lead to the impression that there was actually more capacity that was being unused in Maine. And why that was concerning for me was that I stand up every day and chat with people in Maine about where things are and have expressed concerns about our overall capacity and our plans to beef it up. A document that comes out and says there's plenty of capacity out there seems to fly in the face of what I've been saying. And one of the words that I live by came out of the financial crisis, which is that in a crisis, in an emergency, your credibility is the only thing you've got. And I've always tried to be straight with people about where we are and where we want to go. And so documents that suggest otherwise cause confusion. And I'm glad to be able to have the opportunity to give it to people straight in an opportunity like this.
And that was Maine Public Steve Missler talking with CDC Director Dr. Nirav Shah. For some people, life during the pandemic has meant hunkering down with family members and, if you're fortunate, working from home. But when you happen to be a newlywed separated from your wife by an entire ocean and a professional athlete whose career in Europe is uncertain, priorities have a way of coming into focus.
My name is Troy Barneys. I'm from Auburn, Maine, and I went to Edward Little High School. Then I graduated high school, went to University of Maine. And then after that, I got an agent and became a professional basketball player. And for the last 9 years, I've been playing overseas in Europe. When I played in Hungary, I was living there, and I met a girl, a Norwegian, and she was there for medical school. She's like one of those people that, you know, has that strange, unique brain and memory that remembers everything. Like when, you know, people say you know when you know. Like we knew. We just knew. We got married the end of July in 2019. And so we're basically newlyweds. And we spent the rest of that summer together. And then she had to go back to Norway in August for school. I was going to follow up behind her. But then I got my contract. I saw her in November, and then now I haven't seen her since, in person. I was with this Russian team from January till March, and because of the pandemic, our season was suspended. Things were starting to get out of control in Europe, and all Americans were basically starting to go home. So I signed a termination contract, so I basically only got paid 2 or 3 months working with the Russian team. So Sandra was in Norway when the pandemic hit, and I was in Russia. Russia closed down borders to all countries from exit and entry, And Norway did the same. Norway's like, if you don't have a green card and you're not a citizen, I don't care who you are, you can't come in and you can't leave. So I couldn't get to Norway, and she couldn't leave to come to me. So my only choice was to go to America, and I got on one of the only flights that was available at the time to go to New York to fly back home at least. With everything going on, you can't find an apartment right now. So I'm living out of the bags basically that I've been traveling the world with, and I'm sleeping on a couch in my own hometown. Now I have to basically budget my own money that I've been saving up, and I can't get a job anywhere now. The first thing I'm worried about right now is the next time I'll be able to see Sandra. Like, I'm waiting, like I said, for the dust to settle. Both of us are. So we FaceTime every single day, and we text all day together. I'm really curious about how everything's going to end up with the pandemic going on, especially in the professional sports, and how these leagues around the world, not just basketball, but even like the spring sports, are going to finish or continue maybe next season. I'm just really curious at how everything's going to end up.
That's Troy Barnes, a professional basketball player from Auburn, Maine. His story was produced by Susan Sharon. If you or someone you know has something to share about life during the pandemic, write to us at tellmemore@mainepublic.org and let us know the best way to reach you. And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. Have a great weekend. I'm Ed Morin.